This is The Conversation, and I'm David Hyde, in for Ross Reynolds. It's Black History Month, and the Oscars are coming up. And there are two Oscar-nominated films this year that deal with African-American history. One is Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, and the other is Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained. The movie stars include Leonardo DiCaprio, who plays the part of a maniacal slave master, and Samuel L. Jackson, playing the part of an equally maniacal house slave.
And that's when you knowed your goose was cooked.
Columnist Frank Rich says Django Unchained should win the Oscar, but it won't. Frank Rich writes for New York Magazine. Previously, he was a columnist for the New York Times for many years. His most recent piece appears in the latest New York Magazine. Frank Rich, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So Quentin Tarantino is saying, yeah, this movie is super controversial, and that was a big part of the point. In fact, he says the whole idea of doing a movie like this was to take a rock and throw it through the glass. What is Quentin Tarantino up to in Django Unchained, do you think?
He puts the sting back into slavery as much as a film director can do it. Nothing can, of course, match the real atrocity of slavery, but it's grueling in its presentation of what life was like for Black people, African Americans, in the antebellum South.
The person that I was with actually had to, covered her eyes, put her fingers in her ears, and I was thinking, this seems a little bit sadistic.
It forces you to think about what the hell is happening and remember it. It's good to be reminded of just how harsh this was, that there were atrocities involved. And Tarantino didn't make this stuff up. I mean, he may be fictionalizing with his characters, but this is the kind of stuff that went on down there and went on not just in Mississippi, but wherever slavery was in America. So I think he's up to that. I also think he's up to, messing with our brains a bit in terms of how we look at good guys and bad guys. One thing he's done in this film that almost no one would go near, and certainly very few white film artists would go near, is he's created a truly demonic and hateful Black character. An Uncle Tom played by Samuel Jackson, who is chilling and has no saving graces and is every bit as ugly as the sadistic white plantation owner who's his keeper, played by Leonardo DiCaprio in the film.
Samuel L. Jackson plays this head house slave and definitely is not a very nice person. Is he up for any awards for that part?
No, I think that it's fascinating to me that Jackson, who's, widely regarded as, in the front rank of American actors and gives a performance unlike any that I've ever seen in any American movie, that he has essentially been snubbed by not just the Oscars, but the Golden Globes, I think shows how effectively Tarantino scared people, and they didn't know what to say about it or do about it. They'd rather just look the other way, kind of as people, in the same way that people want to look the other way from some of the violence in the film. And so I think that's sort of a vote of confidence in how effective Tarantino and Jackson's conceit was with this character, whose name is Steven in the film.
Spike Lee has been criticizing the movie. There's the N-word is used a lot. And Spike Lee says, basically, look, a spaghetti Western type movie is not the right way to deal with something as serious as slavery. What do you think of that criticism?
I think it's fatuous. First of all, Spike Lee has said he's not seeing the movie. So the idea that any artist, an artist in particular, would condemn another artist's work without having seen it is arrogant and preposterous. And I think that the fact that the spaghetti Western devices are used by Tarantino is no more meaningful or not than any storytelling tropes that you might use in talking about the subject. Is blues music can be used to talk about slavery. The satire can be used. Tragedy can be used. To take a pop culture form like spaghetti Western and think that per se that automatically makes it not a serious movie is just silly. And he obviously, and by the way, this same kind of criteria couldn't could also be applied to Spike Lee's body of work, which I'm a fan of, but, you know, should, you know, Do the Right Thing. Should that have had laughs in it, given that it deals with racial tension? It had terrific comedy in it. So it's just stupid, I think.
How does this movie, Django Unchained, do you think fit into the larger history of this period in American history, movies like Birth of a Nation or Gone with the Wind?
Well, I think Tarantino, as someone who dotes on and is a sort of amateur scholar of American cinema in general, very, very pointedly in this film, it takes on both those movies. And, of course, both Birth of a Nation before World War One and Gone with the Wind right before World War Two did as much as they were hugely successful films. And whatever their merits in terms of the art of film, both of them did more than probably anything else in pop culture to perpetuate myths about the South and about the Civil War and about slavery in general. And they've long been debunked on those scores, but he really takes them on. So, for instance, the plantation where much of Django Unchained is set is kind of a tarragon, really rancid. Instead of it representing the chivalrous old South, it's a place where essentially there's genocide and rape and unspeakable cruelty, and yet it looks every bit as beautiful as Tara in the film. In the case of Birth of a Nation, which was, among other things, sort of rationalized the Ku Klux Klan, Tarantino has a, even though it's not called the KKK, and in fact, KKK didn't exist at the time Django is set, because it only started in Reconstruction, he has a scene sort of mocking the Klan, and it seems to be a kind of a comic reference to Griffith's film.
Yeah. I thought one of the most hilarious scenes in the movie, actually. And I kept thinking about Mel Brooks a little bit and Blazing Saddles. Did that come to mind for you at all while you were watching Django?
I did. In fact, in my piece for New York, I had a riff I didn't include, but I think that there's a thin line between both Django Unchained and Blazing Saddles, and also between Tarantino's previous counter history, Inglourious Basterds, and Springtime for Hitler. You know, there's just like, and I don't think, when you look at Blazing Saddles, for the time it was made, on some of the racial stuff, Brooks was actually rather daring by an iconoclastic, but, you know, by the standards of several decades ago. And I think that Tarantino takes it way, way further, but he's not afraid to have laughter about really grave subjects. Let's face it. You know, racial genocide, the Klan, mob scenes like that are pretty serious subjects. But what I like about Tarantino in this film is that he's not afraid of any of that. He's willing to go there and take kids for it.
I want to also ask you just directly about the movie Lincoln, which you think is pretty popular in the other Washington. Why is that?
Well, what's been fascinating about Lincoln, and this is no fault of the movie Lincoln or Steven Spielberg or Tony Kushner who wrote it, is that Lincoln was seized upon by sort of the Beltway establishment of both parties to say, this is an object lesson of how government should work, that you need to compromise, which is true, and you need to give and to get, and if only the world would operate that way now, if only things like the Simpson-Bowles Commission would be taken seriously by both parties, we wouldn't be in the jam we're in. But they completely, this reading of Lincoln, which was, you know, by op-ed columnists, by Democratic and Republican politicians, is bogus. In Lincoln, you do see Lincoln practice a kind of compromise to get the 13th Amendment across. But it's a compromise of process that a president couldn't even do now. Lincoln, you see Lincoln get votes basically by buying them, by giving out patronage, giving out jobs, giving out favors. No president can do that today unless he wants to be impeached or be the subject of investigative hearings that would go on in perpetuity. And so it's not really relevant today's Washington. And on the central principle of the 13th Amendment of wanting to abolish slavery, Lincoln doesn't compromise at all in the movie, and he didn't at that point when it passed in actual history. So it's a completely false analogy that to me just shows the sort of cliched, bankrupt, why can't we all get along and, you know, that'll solve our civic problems. I don't think it's that simple. But I found a certain amount of hilarity in reading columnist after columnist, particularly in Washington, saying everyone in Congress should be forced to see Lincoln. This will teach them how to behave. And one columnist who noted that Obama had an invited screening of Lincoln at the White House for some congressional leaders, said, you know, he should do this more and more. He should have more Lincoln screenings so we can have more of this comity, more of this bipartisan agreement. What that columnist failed to note was that both Mitch McConnell and John Boehner said no when they were invited by the White House to see Lincoln. So they can't agree to go see a free movie. It's hard to believe that kind of technique is going to solve the budget crisis and everything else that's coming down the pike.
And no one's calling for screenings of Django Unchained, I would imagine. Do you think that would be helpful?
I'd like to be there and see it. I think, yes. And there you get back to that quote of Tarantino, as he's throwing a rock through the glass, as it were, of history. And it's too impolite a movie, I think, for Washington politicians to be caught dead seeing. It would do them a lot more good to see it, I think, than Lincoln. But I suspect they're not. I suspect most of them don't see most movies anyway, regardless of what they are, because having covered Washington for years and having grown up there, culture in Washington are, in the same sense, almost an oxymoron, even pop culture in Washington.
All right, Frank Rich, thanks so much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
For another perspective, we turn to Sean Wilentz. He's a contributing editor at The New Republic and a history professor at Princeton University. His books include Bob Dylan in America and The Rise of American Democracy, Jefferson to Lincoln. And his recent piece about Steven Spielberg's Lincoln was published in The New Republic. Sean Wilentz, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be here.
Frank Rich actually writes about both Lincoln and Django Unchained and says he thinks Lincoln, you know, makes us feel good about the past when we should feel a lot more unsettled about American race relations in the past and the present. So partly for that reason, he prefers Quentin Tarantino's Django Unchained to Lincoln. What do you think?
Well, if you think slavery was a spaghetti Western, I guess that's true. But no, I mean, look, I see the point that Frank is making, but tell you the truth, I haven't seen Django Unchained. I've only heard about it. So my previous remark was, somewhat flippant. But, you know, the fact is, I think what Lincoln achieves is something that's really extraordinary, and I can't imagine any other film quite coming near it.
Princeton University professor Sean Wilentz's recent piece about Steven Spielberg's movie Lincoln was published in the latest New Republic. A lot of Beltway pundits have been writing about this film and saying that it's a celebration of bipartisanship. What do you think about that as a reading of the film and as a reading of history?
I think it's a total misreading of both. I mean, if you look at the film, there's not much bipartisanship between the Democrats and the Republicans in that film. They're screaming at each other. The Northern Democrats in the film are, you know, basically pro-slavery, but they're certainly quite racist, quite devoted to pulling down the 13th Amendment. What Lincoln manages to do is nothing to do with compromise or bipartisanship. He manages through every, you know, by hook and by crook, to get just enough Democrats to come along with him to get the 30th Amendment passed. That's not bipartisanship. That's not post-partisanship. That's partisanship with, you know, abetted by all kinds of, what people might think of as dirty politics, using patronage and using promises and using all kinds of things, and using moral pressure as well, to get just enough Democrats to come across the line. That's politics as I understand it. That's how politics works. That's how politics traditionally has worked in this country. And so it's not the negation of partisanship. It's rather, using politics, real politics, in a way to get your own way and to defeat the other side.
Is that depiction of Lincoln historically accurate?
Pretty much so. I mean, the 13th Amendment is kind of the high point in his presidency of his direct involvement in that kind of thing. But look, Abraham Lincoln is known as a lot of things. He's known as an orator. He's known as a great political thinker. But what he really was, his profession, if he was to fill out a passport card or something, and when you say profession, he would have to write one thing, and that's politician. He was a politician. He was a politician all his life, and he remained a politician as president. He didn't become a saint. He remained a Paul. Now, he managed to do some extraordinary things, which, looking back on, might look saintly. But he didn't undertake them with by being above politics. He did it by being engaged in politics.
So do you think, given the current cultural distaste for politicians, that a lot of viewers are going to come away saying, gee, Lincoln, he's just not the great man that I thought he was? Or they're going to come away saying, gee, politicians aren't as bad as I thought they were?
I think if Spielberg succeeds, and to the extent that I've heard reactions, it'll be the latter. It'll lead people to rethink perhaps their reflex assumption that politics. When you say have the word politics, you hear the word politics, you kind of inaudibly insert the word dirty before it. You know that all politics are dirty. Well, if all politics are dirty, then democracy is kind of impossible, because democracy in a country as varied and with as many different clashes as we have can never work without there being some kind of, what should we say, adjustments, persuasion. It has to be done in a way that allows those conflicts to work themselves out in a way that is not always seemly, but that in the end manages to get the job done.
And you actually compare Lincoln, Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, the 1939 film starring James Stewart as this naive Senator Smith. What's the comparison that you're making there?
Well, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is a different kind of myth, or contains a different kind of myth. It's the myth of American populism. That here's Jefferson Smith, Jimmy Stewart, who's this kind of hayseed who comes out of nowhere. And, he has real beliefs, and the nasty politicians are trying to undo that. And there's one scene, in fact, at the Lincoln Memorial where you see this noble man of the people, completely politically naive or politically, not schooled in insider politics. He somehow gets identified with Lincoln, as if Lincoln was not a man of politics. And then, of course, he wins the day against the wily politicians. What Spielberg's film shows is the wily politicians abolishing slavery. It's just the opposite. It's the insider game that, in fact, manages to get something done. And that, in fact, has more to do with how politics is actually operated in this country, even in our own time. I mean, if you look at how the politics of civil rights worked itself out, moving from what's going on in the streets of Birmingham and elsewhere, the civil rights movement's getting things shaken up. But in the end, there's politics in Washington, and there's a lot of chicanery that's going on. There's a lot of the ways in which Lyndon Johnson, for example, got Republicans to come along with him on civil rights is not unlike the story of Lincoln. So, that in the end is an important story that needs to be told.
So it's one story. It's not the only story. Some critics are saying, look, this movie should have dealt more with the role that African Americans themselves played in ending slavery. People like Frederick Douglass. What do you make of that criticism?
Well, Frederick Douglass is a great man, but the film isn't about that part of the emancipation story. I mean, it's purposely not to try to write and do an epic movie on Reconstruction would be a great movie. It's just not the movie that Spielberg chose to make, and I think it would be almost impossible to make that kind of epic. There are many movies to be made about Reconstruction. This is one of them, and it's a very good one.
I know you're not a film critic, but what did you think of Daniel Day-Lewis's portrayal of Lincoln from your perspective as a historian?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did a good job. He did a great job. There's a little bit of too much saintliness at times, maybe in the lighting even, that make him glow. Lincoln was not quite as enfeebled physically as Day-Lewis would have you suggest, or his performance would have you suggest. He actually remained quite strong, although very tired and very haggard. Physically, he was not stooped. But, I can understand why they did that. They wanted to show a man who was beleaguered, a president who was beleaguered. Other than that, though, I think he did a good job, very good job. He got the high-pitched, what we read about Lincoln. His performance certainly conforms with that. And, you know, basically he showed a guy who was wily yet approachable at the same time. And, you know, it's quite true that, you know, Stanton would always, Secretary of War Edwin Stanton would always roll his eyes whenever Lincoln, in reply to almost anything, would say, well, you know, that reminds me of a story. And there would be Stanton rolling his eyes. Well, that's the way Lincoln was. Sometimes there were stories that had a purpose. Sometimes there were stories that were just funny. But that was the kind of, that was the way that he related to people. And I think Day-Lewis caught that very, very well.
All right, John Lentz, last question. Since you study the past, I feel like you're as well qualified as anybody else to predict the future. So what do you think? Is Lincoln going to win the Academy Award?
I don't know. I was just out in Los Angeles. And, I mean, there it wasn't about Django Unchained. It was about Ben Affleck's film that was making a big surge or something among the voters. I have no way to. It's hard enough to read the United States, but it's really hard to read Hollywood.
All right, Sean Malentz, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks so much. Take care.
Princeton University professor Sean Malentz's recent piece about Steven Spielberg's movie Lincoln was published in the latest New Republic. His books include Bob Dylan in America and The Rise of American Democracy, Jefferson to Lincoln. Today's program was produced by Arwin Nix with help from Cameron Drews and Amber Cortez. Bernard Ouellette is at the helm. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde.